Chapter 63. Will not be the smallest impropriety, Miss Snevellicci, sir, is the very soul of honor. It would be of material service. The gentleman from London, author of the new piece, actor in the new piece, first appearance on any boards, it would lead to a great bespeak, Mr. Johnson. Apostrophe, I am very sorry to throw a damp upon the prospects of anybody, and more especially a lady, apostrophe, replied Nicholas. But really I must decidedly object to making one of the canvassing party. Apostrophe, what does Mr. Johnson say, Vincent? Apostrophe inquired a voice close to his ear, and, looking round, he found Mrs. Crummles and Miss Snevellicci herself standing behind him. He has some objection, my dear, apostrophe replied Mr. Crummles, looking at Nicholas. Objection! Apostrophe exclaimed Mrs. Crummles. Can it be possible? Apostrophe, oh, I hope not. Apostrophe cried Miss Snevellicci. You surely are not so cruel, oh, dear me. Well, I too think of that now, after all one's looking forward to it. Apostrophe, Mr. Johnson will not persist, my dear, apostrophe said Mrs. Crummles. Think better of him than to suppose it. Gallantry, humanity, all the best feelings of his nature, must be enlisted in this interesting cause. Apostrophe, which moves even a manager, apostrophe said Mr. Crummles, smiling. And a manager's wife, apostrophe added Mrs. Crummles, in her accustomed tragedy tones. Come, you will relent, I know you will. Apostrophe, it is not in my nature, apostrophe said Nicholas, moved by these appeals, to resist any entreaty, unless it is to do something positively wrong, and, beyond a feeling of pride, I know nothing which should prevent my doing this. I know nobody here, and nobody knows me. So be it then. I yield. Apostrophe, Miss Snevellicci was at once overwhelmed with blushes and expressions of gratitude, of which latter commodity neither Mr. nor Mrs. Crummles was by any means sparing. It was arranged that Nicholas should call upon her at her lodgings at 11 next morning, and soon after they parted, he to return home to his authorship, Miss Snevellicci to dress for the afterpiece, and the disinterested manager and his wife to discuss the probable gains of the forthcoming bespeak, of which they were to have 2/3 of the profits by solemn treaty of agreement. At the stipulated hour next morning, Nicholas repaired to the lodgings of Miss Snevellicci, which were in a place called Lombard Street, at the house of a tailor. A strong smell of ironing pervaded the little passage, and the tailor's daughter, who opened the door, appeared in that flutter of spirits which is so often attendant upon the periodical getting up of a family's linen. Miss Snevellicci lives here, I believe? Apostrophe said Nicholas, when the door was opened. The tailor's daughter replied in the affirmative. Will you have the goodness to let her know that Mr. Johnson is here? Apostrophe said Nicholas. Oh, if you please, you're to come upstairs, apostrophe replied the tailor's daughter, with a smile. Nicholas followed the young lady, and was shown into a small apartment on the first floor, communicating with a back room, in which, as he judged from a certain half-subdued clinking sound, as of cups and saucers, Miss Snevellicci was then taking her breakfast in bed. Here to wait, if you please, apostrophe said the tailor's daughter, after a short period of absence, during which the clinking in the back room had ceased, and been succeeded by whispering she won't be long. Apostrophe, as she spoke, she pulled up the window blind, and having by this means, as she thought, diverted Mr. Johnson's attention from the room to the street, caught up some articles which were airing on the fender, and had very much the appearance of stockings, and darted off. As there were not many objects of interest outside the window, Nicholas looked about the room with more curiosity than he might otherwise have bestowed upon it. On the sofa lay an old guitar, several thumbed pieces of music, and a scattered litter of curl papers, together with a confused heap of playbills, and a pair of soiled white satin shoes with large blue rosettes. hanging over the back of a chair, was a half-finished muslin apron with little pockets ornamented with red ribbons, such as waiting women wear on the stage, and, by consequence, are never seen with anywhere else. In one corner stood the diminutive pair of top boots in which Miss Snevellicci was accustomed to enact the little jockey, and, folded on a chair hard by, was a small parcel, which bore a very suspicious resemblance to the companion smalls. But the most interesting object of all was, perhaps, the open scrapbook, displayed in the midst of some theatrical duodecimos, that were strewn upon the table. And pasted into which scrapbook were various critical notices of Miss Snevellicci's acting, extracted from different provincial journals, together with one poetic address in her honor, commencing, "Sing, God of love, and tell me in what dearth thrice gifted Snevellicci came on earth, to thrill us with her smile, her tear, her eye. Sing, God of love, and tell me quickly why." Besides this effusion, there were innumerable complimentary allusions, also extracted from newspapers, such as we observe from an advertisement in another part of our paper of today, that the charming and highly talented Miss Snevellicci takes her benefit on Wednesday, for which occasion she has put forth a bill of fare that might kindle exhilaration in the breast of a misanthrope. In the confidence that our fellow townsmen have not lost that high appreciation of public utility and private worth, for which they have long been so preeminently distinguished, we predict that this charming actress will be greeted with a bumper. Apostrophe to correspondence. J. S. is misinformed when he supposes that the highly gifted and beautiful Miss Snevellicci, nightly captivating all hearts at our pretty and commodious little theater, is not the same lady to whom the young gentleman of immense fortune, residing within 100 miles of the good city of York, lately made honorable proposals. We have reason to know that Miss Snevellicci is the lady who was implicated in that mysterious and romantic affair, and whose conduct on that occasion did no less honor to her head and heart than do her histrionic triumphs to her brilliant genius. Apostrophe a copious assortment of such paragraphs as these, with long bills of benefits all ending with "come early" in large capitals, form the principal contents of Miss Snevellicci's scrapbook. Nicholas had read a great many of these scraps, and was absorbed in a circumstantial and melancholy account of the train of events which had led to Miss Snevellicci's spraining her ankle by slipping on a piece of orange peel flung by a monster in human form, so the paper said. Upon the stage at Winchester, when that young lady herself, attired in the coal scuttle bonnet and walking dress complete, tripped into the room, with 1,000 apologies for having detained him so long after the appointed time. "But really," apostrophe said Miss Snevellicci, "my darling Led, who lives with me here, was taken so very ill in the night, that I thought she would have expired in my arms." Apostrophe, "such a fate is almost to be envied," apostrophe returned Nicholas, "but I am very sorry to hear it nevertheless." Apostrophe, "what a creature you are to flatter." Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Miss Snevellicci, buttoning her glove in much confusion. "If it be flattery to admire your charms and accomplishments," apostrophe rejoined Nicholas, laying his hand upon the scrapbook, "you have better specimens of it here." Apostrophe, "oh you cruel creature, to read such things as those. I'm almost ashamed to look you in the face afterwards. Positively I am," apostrophe said Miss Snevellicci, seizing the book and putting it away in a closet. "How careless of Led! How could she be so naughty?" Apostrophe, "I thought you had kindly left it here, on purpose for me to read," apostrophe said Nicholas. "And really it did seem possible. I wouldn't have had you see it for the world." Apostrophe, apostrophe, rejoined Miss Snevellicci. "I never was so vexed, never. But she is such a careless thing, there's no trusting her." Apostrophe, the conversation was here interrupted by the entrance of the phenomenon, who had discreetly remained in the bedroom up to this moment, and now presented herself, with much grace and lightness, bearing in her hand a very little green parasol with a broad fringe border, and no handle. After a few words, of course, they sallied into the street. The phenomenon was rather a troublesome companion, for first the right sandal came down, and then the left, and these mischances being repaired, one leg of the little white trousers was discovered to be longer than the other. Besides these accidents, the green parasol was dropped down an iron grating, and only fished up again with great difficulty, and by dint of much exertion. However, it was impossible to scold her, as she was the manager's daughter, so Nicholas took it all in perfect good humor, and walked on, with Miss Snevellicci, arm in arm on one side, and the offending infant on the other. The first house to which they bent their steps was situated in a terrace of respectable appearance. Miss Snevellicci's modest double knock was answered by a footboy, who, in reply to her inquiry whether Mrs. Curdle was at home, opened his eyes very wide, grinned very much, and said he didn't know, but he'd inquire. With this he showed them into a parlor, where he kept them waiting until the two women servants had repaired thither, under false pretenses, to see the play actors. And having compared notes with them in the passage, and joined in a vast quantity of whispering and giggling, he at length went upstairs with Miss Snevellicci's name. Now, Mrs. Curdle was supposed, by those who were best informed on such points, to possess quite the London taste in matters relating to literature and the drama, and as to Mr. Curdle, he had written a pamphlet of 64 pages. Post octavo, on the character of the nurse's deceased husband in Romeo and Juliet, with an inquiry whether he really had been a merry man in his lifetime, or whether it was merely his widow's affectionate partiality that induced her so to report him. He had likewise proved that by altering the received mode of punctuation, any one of Shakespeare's plays could be made quite different, and the sense completely changed. It is needless to say, therefore, that he was a great critic, and a very profound, and most original thinker. Well, Miss Snevellicci, apostrophe, said Mrs. Curdle, entering the parlor, and how do you do? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Miss Snevellicci made a graceful obeisance, and hoped Mrs. Curdle was well, as also Mr. Curdle, who at the same time appeared. Mrs. Curdle was dressed in a morning wrapper, with a little cap stuck upon the top of her head. Mr. Curdle wore a loose robe on his back, and his right forefinger on his forehead after the portraits of Sterne, to whom somebody or other had once said he bore a striking resemblance. I venture to call, for the purpose of asking, whether you would put your name to my bespeak, ma'am, apostrophe, said Miss Snevellicci, producing documents. Oh, I really don't know what to say, apostrophe, replied Mrs. Curdle. It's not as if the theater was in its high and palmy days. You needn't stand, Miss Snevellicci, the drama is gone, perfectly gone. Apostrophe, as an exquisite embodiment of the poet's visions, and a realization of human intellectuality, gilding with refulgent light our dreamy moments, and laying open a new and magic world before the mental eye, the drama is gone, perfectly gone, apostrophe, said Mr. Curdle. What man is there, now living, who can present before us all those changing and prismatic colors with which the character of Hamlet is invested? Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mrs. Curdle. What man indeed upon the stage, apostrophe, said Mr. Curdle, with a small reservation in favor of himself. Hamlet. Pooh. Ridiculous. Hamlet is gone, perfectly gone. Apostrophe, quite overcome by these dismal reflections, Mr. and Mrs. Curdle sighed, and sat for some short time without speaking. At length, the lady, turning to Miss Snevellicci, inquired what play she proposed to have. Quite a new one, apostrophe, said Miss Snevellicci, apostrophe, of which this gentleman is the author, and in which he plays, being his first appearance on any stage. Mr. Johnson is the gentleman's name. Apostrophe, I hope you have preserved the unities, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Curdle. The original piece is a French one, apostrophe, said Nicholas. There is abundance of incident, sprightly dialogue, strongly marked characters, apostrophe all unavailing without a strict observance of the unities. Sir, apostrophe returned Mr. Curdle. The unities of the drama, before everything. Apostrophe, might I ask you, apostrophe said Nicholas, hesitating between the respect he ought to assume, and his love of the whimsical, might I ask you what the unities are? Apostrophe, Mr. Curdle coughed and considered. The unities, sir, apostrophe he said, are a completeness, a kind of universal dovetailedness with regard to place, and time, a sort of a general oneness, if I may be allowed to use so strong an expression. I take those to be the dramatic unities, so far as I have been enabled to bestow attention upon them, and I have read much upon the subject, and thought much. I find, running through the performances of this child, apostrophe said Mr. Curdle, turning to the phenomenon, a unity of feeling, a breadth, a light and shade, a warmth of coloring, a tone, a harmony, a glow, an artistical development of original conceptions, which I look for, in vain, among older performers. I don't know whether I make myself understood. Apostrophe, perfectly, apostrophe replied Nicholas. Just so, apostrophe said Mr. Curdle, pulling up his neckcloth. That is my definition of the unities of the drama. Apostrophe, Mrs. Curdle had sat listening to this lucid explanation with great complacency. It being finished, she inquired what Mr. Curdle thought about putting down their names. I don't know, my dear. Upon my word, I don't know, apostrophe said Mr. Curdle. If we do, it must be distinctly understood that we do not pledge ourselves to the quality of the performances. Let it go forth to the world that we do not give them the sanction of our names, but that we confer the distinction merely upon Miss Snevellicci. That being clearly stated, I take it to be, as it were, a duty, that we should extend our patronage to a degraded stage, even for the sake of the associations with which it is entwined. Have you got 2 and 6 pence for half a crown, Miss Snevellicci? Apostrophe said Mr. Curdle, turning over 4 of those pieces of money. Miss Snevellicci felt in all the corners of the pink reticule, but there was nothing in any of them. Nicholas murmured a jest about his being an author, and thought it best not to go through the form of feeling in his own pockets at all. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.